Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
I'm Carrie Diamond.
And I'm Claudia Wu. And we're the founders of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food.
We have a great lineup for you today. Agatha Kalaga and Aaron Patankin are here. They're the founders of Ovenly, the great Greenpoint ladies, Williamsburg, which do...
It's based in Greenpoint.
Yeah. The great Greenpoint bakery, known for such treats as gooey honey blondies, Brooklyn blackout cake, and salted chocolate chip cookies. And we also have Olivia Kim, the Vice President of Creative Projects at Nordstrom, who's going to talk to us about a cool project she's doing and her creative process.
Today's show is brought to you by Ecole au Chocolat, the online school for those looking to become chocolate makers or chocolate experts. The great thing is that you can study at your own pace. So if you have a day job but dream about having your own chocolate company one day, you can make it happen. Be sure to check out the site at ecoleauchocolat.com.
I saw that their bean to bar program, Claudia, starts, I think, like April 1st. You're meant to do that. You know that. One day Claudia is going to have her own chocolate company. Just wait.
Just wait. I eat enough of it.
So if you are a regular listener, you know that neither of us were here last week, thanks to our guest hosts, Gilly Houston and Donna Yen. They did a great job. And I was solo for a few weeks before that because Claudia was on the road. Where'd you go, Claudia?
Yeah, this great indie magazine symposium invited one of us out. And I went. It was in Singapore. It was our second year. And, you know, we just had a weekend of hanging out with indie magazine makers and publishers, and it was great.
Tell us, what was Singapore like?
Singapore was, all of Asia was blazing hot. I literally...
This time of year?
Yeah. I can't even imagine what it's like during the summer.
I've been to Vietnam in July and August, and it's like a sauna. It's just like a giant open-air sauna.
Luckily, it kind of helps your skin, so you look dewy just all the time. It's great.
Claudia came back tan, which is crazy.
I don't recognize myself sometimes. But Singapore is pretty amazing. There's kind of a burgeoning creative scene there, so... It's really lovely, and it's so clean.
And they speak English, right?
And they do speak English.
So you don't have to be intimidated to travel there if you are worried about not knowing a language. You met some really cool folks. You met the...
So Rosa Park from Serial was there. Omar from Appartamento. The editor of The Happy Reader, Seb. The two founders of this cute magazine called Wrap, which is all about illustration. And then they have these, like, pull-out illustrations you can use as wrapping paper. It's super cute. This guy Kai, who does this magazine called Offscreen. So it was amazing, you know, and I, through the weekend hearing everyone talk, I just realized that we all have the same problems. Like, I could commiserate with all of them.
That's pretty funny. I'm sure we have some problems in common with our next two guests, but they're here to talk all about solutions. Agatha and Aaron founded Ovenly 6 years ago and quickly made a name for themselves in the New York baking scene. They have a dedicated following for their beautifully crafted goodies, but they are not here today to talk about cookies and cakes and blondies and brownies. I'm sorry for those of you who are hoping that would be today's show. They're here to talk about social enterprise and enlightened business practices. They put as much thought into hiring, working conditions, employee benefits, and environmental impact as they do their celebrated baked goods. So we thought you'd like to hear more about how a small business does this. Agatha, Aaron, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And sorry for interrupting your lunch. We we totally faked them out. We're like, oh, you have all the time in the world. Go get a Roberta's pizza.
I didn't know I could eat one piece of slice in less than 32 seconds, but I'm glad I know that about myself now.
We actually just ate an entire pizza in about 2 minutes.
Bravo. Sorry about that. But we're super psyched you're here. And Agatha, you and I were part of a group at dinner one night, and you started telling me a little bit about what you guys do, and I was so blown away. You know, Claudia and I have Cherry Bomb, and I have some small businesses, you know, I have my restaurants. And it's so hard just to do the basics and to get that product out the door, let alone think about the important social things behind it. And, you know, I know a lot of us really dream of having businesses that are also social enterprises. I'm personally thrilled to hear more about this. So why don't we start with how you two met? Because you didn't come from traditional food backgrounds.
So Aaron and I are both career changers, as many business owners are. But we met at a food-focused book club. And I, at the time, was working for NYU School of Medicine. My background is in psychiatry research and social work. And we met at this food-focused book club. And about a week later, decided to start a business, which ended up being Ovenly. But Erin also, her background is in social justice. So this ties into what we'll be talking about today.
Was it always a focus from the start to do something like this? Or, you know, we'll talk about more about what you guys are doing for all your employees and about like zero waste. But was that always in the back of your mind?
Go ahead.
This is Erin. I think that the only thing that we thought about when we started was literally getting the cookies out the door. So it took a couple years for us to start thinking about the business. And I think anyone who has a small company that starts out bootstrapped like we did, we didn't have any money. We didn't have any funders to start. And we only had ourselves. 6 months after we started, I had to quit my job, and like 8 months later, Agatha had to quit her job. So we really only focused on the product, and I think a lot of other small business owners will identify with that, and just, you know, getting the work done every day. So
how did it start? Did you two say to each other like, okay, it's really nice that we make cookies and scones and all this, and people love them, but there's got to be more to this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that a part of what we've been doing is something that has always been ingrained in Ovenly, and I think that just wasn't necessarily an active part of the conversation. So we don't cut corners, and I think that always the assumption with scaling a business is, well, you have to cut corners somewhere, and Aaron and I have never felt that way. We'd rather not do something than do it half-assed or have to cut corners to do it. So from the beginning, when we opened up our shop, Jeffrey, one of our regular customers, happens to be a social worker, and he works at an organization called Getting Out, Staying Out. And he came in one day and said, hey, I work with formerly incarcerated young men. Would you guys ever give us a chance? And would you hire anyone like that? And of course we said yes. We didn't give it a second thought. And since 2012, we've been working with Jeffrey and with Goso to hire young men that have been previously incarcerated. So it's something that we've been doing and has been a fabric of the company. And it's just that we've started to actively have a conversation about it because it does add value to what we're doing. And I think that is the part that is really meaningful. We aren't intentionally doing it as a marketing tool. It's just something that feels good to us, and we feel that it's an important part of business and supporting local communities.
I think that meeting Jeffrey for us, Jeffrey Golia, who's the social worker from Getting Out and Staying Out, it was a moment where it came right at the right time. It was at the moment where all of a sudden Agatha and I were not baking anymore, and we had more time to think about the business. So that was a very opportune meeting. And it did start that conversation back then about, well, are we just making cookies? Like you said, Carrie. And I know Agatha and I both felt pretty strongly that we wanted to be hiring people from communities and societies where they might not have always the same opportunities as other people. So that started that conversation. And like Agatha said, it's just kind of who we are, and our backgrounds are both in sort of community work. But I think that, you know, something that has been really helpful is we both started doing more professional development and thinking a lot more about the company, where we want to be in 10 years. And a huge piece of this is that we're going from not talking about it really because it was just a part of who we are to talking about it. And I think that one of the things that we were afraid of in talking about this work that we're doing is that we didn't want it to come off as inauthentic, because the core of our business model is always going to be delicious cookies. So we wanted to really go back to our staff and say, how should we be talking about this? So in the past, I would say 3 months or so, we've really started engaging the people that are allowing our company to run and talking to them about what our core values are and what our vision looks like. And so, you know, it's been a really interesting process to start putting that into words. And even though it isn't a marketing strategy, it is a reason I think that people should be choosing Ovenly over other organizations, because it's added value. I mean, we're moving every day towards paying our staff $15 an hour. We're providing benefits. We use organic and local wherever possible. We're reducing our waste to zero by the end of the year. We're going to be carbon positive by the end of 2017. And this comes from a place of these are our beliefs, and we're putting them into action through business. And so I think that we're learning as we go about how to talk about this in an authentic way that's not like, you should come here because we do stuff that's good. You should come to Ovenly because we make good cookies. That's it. You know, but we also happen to do all these other things.
I think also just a big movement that seems to be happening is just the idea of using business for more than just making money. And we are right now actively trying to use our business as a tool for doing good in the world and to make social change. And I think that that is something that a lot of business owners are thinking about more. And it's something that's very meaningful to us. And a part of, I did a pilot program through Etsy.org, and it was really changing for me in a lot of ways, because it was a group of entrepreneurs who actually do care about scaling businesses responsibly. And I think that that is something that is an important part of the conversation. And it is something, as you mentioned, Carrie, that, you know, it takes time to do. And we were, you know, doing the day-to-day grind and dealing with a lot of bullshit for the first few years. And now we actually have the time to take a step back, think about it, engage our employees, and really actively work on this.
I think that's the most challenging thing when you have a small business. I mean, Claudia and I literally were just talking about this yesterday. You know, we've Cherry Bomb will be 3 years old. It's been like every day has been like getting run over by a truck. Yeah. And just trying to deal with this and all the things that have come our way and try to actually make money and do the right thing and all of that. And we realized, okay, we need to set. We didn't have a business. We still don't have a business plan.
We just recently
we
have
just
a business
made
plan.
It.
So. Oh, good. That makes it feel better.
Yeah.
Never had a business plan. We, you know, things have just happened, and we've acted on them, and we've been very fortunate. But we realized yesterday, you know, we have to sit down and talk about the business right now, the future of the business. What's the 1 year plan? The 5 year plan? The 10 year plan? And we also have to work on communicating with each other, because, mm-hmm. you know, you just assume, you know, we're similar to you guys, you know, no one of us is the boss.
Right.
So when there are two of you, you know, checking in, communicating, making sure you're on the same page. And I think we had said, okay, we literally are going to schedule this time. We're going to put time on the calendar every quarter to talk and say, how are you doing? I'm great. How are you doing? And just, you know, really hash things out and talk about the future. How do you two deal with that?
I mean, I think it's the exact same thing. We didn't, for a long time, it was just like you. The only focus was making sure the bakery didn't burn down. Like, that was all that we needed to look at. And so, you know, in the past year, we take days where we just brainstorm together, and we try to do it at least, we used to have once a week, but it's just not possible. So we're trying to do it like once a month.
It was ambitious.
But I think one of the things we really realized, and we're a company with 48 employees, that we could spend our time in meetings with staff talking about this. So it didn't have to be just us. So we're fitting in these conversations in with staff as well. But, you know, Agatha and I are I think it's hard with two people, if people out there have business partners, because I think especially if you have similar talents, which Agatha and I do, one of us isn't like a math person, and one of us isn't like a creative person. We both kind of have all these different similar skills. And so I think, you know, we've had to go through and just make a list of actual tasks that we are responsible for. And we have had to trust each other not to get in each other's way anymore. It's really hard. Letting go is
tough.
The hardest part about starting, if your business is successful, is like letting go of some of the details or some of the really, I mean, when it's a partnership, you're letting go of some of the really big stuff, and you're choosing to focus on other big stuff. So, you know, it's the same thing. It's communication and also reminders like, oh, that's my project. Can you not do that?
Did you guys bring in any outside help to do this business plan and like kind of someone to help you implement it, or you just did it on
your
own? Not
really. No, we have a variety of business advisors and mentors and people that have been helping us along the way. So yes, I mean, in that sense, it is something that you can't do on your own. And getting people to give input, it just continues to evolve too. I think that a business plan is that, but it's going to evolve and it's going to change sometimes every day. Yeah.
You know, hearing you talk, we're saying, you know, if you have your own business, if you have a small business, but I think this applies to everybody. I have a girlfriend who turned a certain age last year, big number. And she said to me the other day, I feel like I've done nothing with my life. And I was like, give me a break. You've done a lot with your life. But, you know, when you hit a certain age, you look back and you realize how fast time flies. Like, you really don't understand it until you're a little older and you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, my 20s flew, my 30s flew, my 40s are flying. I think it's good not just if you have a business to sit down and evaluate and decide
sure.
what's important to you, but as just a human being.
Absolutely.
You know, it's stuff, you know, sometimes stuff just happens in life and you're fortunate that way. You know, like Claudia and I talk about that, like a lot of times, and I'm sure it's happened to you guys, things just appear in your path and it's great. So it's not something you have to go out and find or seek or figure out on your own. But a lot of times that doesn't happen, you know? So if you are the kind of person who wants to make a difference in the world, mm-hmm. you know, it's not going to happen if you don't do something about it.
Well, it's also, you have to be, if you really want to make a change, I think something that I learned is, and Agatha, you know, Agatha and I were very comfortable higher paying jobs before we committed financial suicide to start a company. And, you know, I think that it's not just what do I want, but what sacrifices am I willing to make? Because you cannot make change without sacrificing something.
Yeah.
So let's talk. You talked about Getting Out and Staying Out, the mm-hmm. great New York organization that you work with. You also work with the Ansab Center for Refugees.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, so the GOSO relationship was obviously, you know, Jeffrey was a huge part of that. And the Ansab Center for Refugees, we started working with a couple of years ago, and they also do job placement for political refugees. So right now, about 30% of our employees are from either one of those organizations. And what's incredible is that some of the folks that have come from Ansab are, I mean, they're coming to Avonlea with master's degrees, and they've owned their own businesses, and they have so much to offer. So we feel so grateful to be working with them. And I think one of the things, just as a side note, is that we really, you know, people ask us, well, is it hard to, you know, do, to employ people that don't necessarily have the experience? And I think that, you know, as with any job, to us, it's more about having a good work ethic, being really stoked about, you know, what you're doing, and being reliable and responsible, and, you know, the desire to learn. And that's what we really look for. And all of the people that come from both of those programs are actually, you know, people that are invested and interested and feel enthusiastic about working for Avonlea. And that's what's important to us.
And do those organizations provide help to you?
They offer support mm-hmm. and they help with, so GOSO does, they actually have a training program for these guys, and the guys have to go through the actual training program, graduate, and then they end up getting placed at, you know, different businesses. And the ANSAP Center for Refugees, there isn't a training program there, but both organizations are really great in terms of providing support or resources or referrals to other places if, you know, we're having challenges with any of the people that are referred from there.
So Getting Out and Staying Out works with formerly incarcerated young men ages, I think, 14?
18.
Or 18-ish to 25. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, actually, that's a misnomer. They work with young men who've been involved with the justice system, mm-hmm. so you don't have to, there's not necessarily an incarceration piece to it, but many of the young men they work with have been incarcerated at some point. So they are a job training program. It's self-selected, so people choose to participate, and, you know, so you already have a level of engagement that's pretty high by the time people are in GOSO. And they also have developed some programs for us that are specific to Avonlea, just through some challenges that we've had. And they now, the way it usually works is they'll place a person in a internship position And then if it works, we may or may not hire them depending on our job capacity at the time. But it's usually people who are also interested in working in kitchens or working in food. So you don't have someone who hopes to one day have some completely different career. There has to be an interest. ANSOB, too, they often place people who've had like manufacturing work or factory work or restaurant work in another country. So it's not, you know, or have some willingness to work that, and this is specifically, we should mention for like our back of house staff, though, that's how that's happening. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of contact with the social workers at both organizations. So
a huge conversation right now is around benefits for employees and wages. Mm-hmm. And even right now, the whole $15 an hour conversation. You have always been great about providing terrific benefits to your employees, and I know you're trying to add even more to that list. Can you walk us through what some of those benefits are and what some of the things are that you hope to add?
Yeah, sure. So our first, we always have had health insurance for full-time employees. My background is largely in nonprofit arts organizations, and I didn't have health care until I was maybe 30.
Wow.
Through my full-time jobs, and I always felt that that was really not great. Or I guess like until I moved to New York when I was like 28. So we provide health insurance. We pay 50% into that. We provide free lunch every day, free dinner every day. We provide uniforms. We provide yoga. And we're also working on some new programs. So we're trying to work with a large distributor right now to buy their produce that they cannot sell. And we will be using it either for to sell at cost to our staff or for family meals. So a lot of our staff have kids, and, you know, it's very expensive in the city to feed people, especially in milk prices. So we're working towards providing more options in terms of ingredients and meals. But also that kind of solves a problem for the organization that we're talking to, which is we solve their waste problems. So it's kind of this nice feedback loop for us. And then we are moving towards changing the way that we provide, like, how a staff member can buy product from us. So we have benefits where people can have cookies every day, but now we're going to be providing, like, a gift card, and they can, if they want a whole cake, they can get a cake. So we're kind of changing around how we do that. What else?
Well, we really focus on professional development, too. Oh, yeah. So we're always doing seminars and workshops for our employees based on what they're interested in. So we'll, you know, survey everyone and find out what they actually want to learn about and hold those professional development seminars, which is really fun. And different people will lead them based on the topic. And I think that that has been really great. I mean, the next one is on personal finance, which is a huge one.
Can I sign up for that?
Yeah. Well, it's also, you know, I mean, some of the people that we work with, they don't even have bank accounts set up, you know, and it's, I think, changing the way that they see things, because a lot of times I think that, you know, certain people don't trust using banks or aren't not able to actually set up a bank account. So they go to check cashing places and, you know, they charge huge fees for that. So it's teaching our employees about those types of things as well.
Aaron, you had mentioned earlier about going zero waste this year.
Oh, yeah. So right now we have pretty minimal waste to begin with. So anything that we can't, that's edible, that we can't sell for one reason or another, gets overcooked. It doesn't look right. It's, you know, we get rid of, everything's fresh every day. We donate to the Greenpoint Church. So it goes to a soup kitchen already. But we have been looking at just little, like, waste also includes, you know, some flour that falls on the floor, and how can we resolve that? And, you know, we've had issues with composting services in our area, unfortunately, in Greenpoint. So we're moving towards finding a better system for composting and also reuse. So we're starting, which is kind of a fun piece of it. So we want to look at, you know, if we overbake a tray of gooey honey blondies, can we turn it into something else that's equally delicious? And so we're working towards also working on that kind of things in the no waste. But we're also working on energy products and or energy projects, and also on the sort of like carbon positive idea, which is we're about to go through an audit of where all of our energy comes from, and we're going to move towards using renewable energy. Very simple to do, not very expensive. And in the carbon offsets, we're working on something that's going to be a very cool project that, since it's not totally firmed up, I won't totally talk about, but we will be enabling customers also to make a choice as to whether or not they want their purchase to be carbon positive. So we're working towards creating the entire company, wow, as a carbon positive company.
Also, just with all of this, too, I think one of the things that we, I don't think that we realized in the beginning was that there are so many resources available out there to help with some of these things for small businesses. And I think that it just takes a little bit of networking and research to find them. But there are different methods of getting help for all of these types of projects, which is
and
great.
And grants.
Grants are huge.
We're looking into just getting some funding, actually, to increase our benefits and our sustainability programs at the company. I mean, that is available now, so.
They're out there.
It's really good to know, because I'm sitting here hearing you talk about all this, and I'm just like, how in the world do you do all this? Do you have... Do you have a staffer whose whole job is just helping you with these issues?
We don't at the moment, but we are. One of our short-term goals is to hire an impact director that can help with some of these bigger projects related to social impact,
and also to some HR items too that fall under impact. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think one of the challenges we faced on the hiring practices that we have are, at what point are we an employer and at what point are we acting as a social service agency? You know, some of our amazing employees have been completely socialized at Rikers Island. So we've had staff members that were in jail from ages 16 to 23. And they have different needs than someone who's coming in with a culinary degree. And so we are trying to figure out what that line is. And that's a challenge when you're an empathetic person. And so that's something that we're looking at, is like, what is that line and how do we develop it?
It also helps that we have an incredible management staff helps us with all of this. They kick ass, and we wouldn't be here without them. So that it's helpful. And I think that it really does, on a sort of management level, communication level, you really, it takes a lot. And some people aren't meant to do a job like this, because we are doing more than just running a kitchen, especially for the back of the house. So we have two really great managers in the back of the house that are doing a phenomenal job and are able to work with all different types of employees, and they're, I feel very grateful for them.
But one of our big things is engaging staff with us. So we've worked with our management team on redeveloping our core values, and they've helped us really think about what is the essence of what we're trying to do. And they're on board.
Yeah.
You know, there is buy-in from all of our staff on all of these programs. People get really excited about it, and that's the right person to work for us. So our finance associate, for example, is going through the life cycle of every one of our products. So we just did the pistachio agave cookie. So what does it take to get
brought here?
That cookie into someone's stomach? Where is it every single step of the way? And it's been interesting, because, you know, she's really into numbers. So she's looking at it and saying, well, what areas are inefficient? Where can we cut out? So it's becoming this...
It's like a math equation.
It's an intellectual challenge.
Yeah, it's really fun.
It is. It's fun. It's interesting. Yeah. So
this is amazing. Well, we're going to skip the speed round, because we wanted to let you talk more about this. We're so intrigued, and we're so blown away. And we really would love for you to come on the show on a regular basis to kind of update us on some of these projects.
Oh, we would absolutely love it. That'd be awesome. And especially when that carbon positive thing is launched.
Absolutely. And, you know, and we'll bring on some other people who are doing similar things. You know, we've had Jordan Lexton from Drive Change.
Jordan is awesome.
She's been on the show. She spoke at our Jubilee conference. But I think there's so many conversations going on right now. Like, we discussed the minimum wage issue, the no tipping, and how that's impacting. You know, think about how many women in this world are waitresses and servers and rely on tips.
And how many women are making money off of cooking. And that's something that we're thinking a lot about, too. So.
Yeah. So so anyway, thank you for coming in and sharing all this and not keeping all this secret.
Oh, no.
And thank you for the cookies, more importantly. If you're listening and you are in New York City or coming to New York City, you really should plan a trip out to Greenpoint. You can go visit the one and only Ovenly location.
No, we have two locations.
Oh, wait, where's the other one?
The other one is in the Vanderbilt Market at the corner of East 45th and Vanderbilt, across from Grand Central.
We also wholesale all over New York City, so you can find our treats at many different coffee shops and cafes throughout the city.
And Smorgasburg starting Saturday.
Oh, God. Oh, okay. So all over. check out their website, and you can find all the different locations. But if you want to make a pilgrimage to the flagship.
Yes. Greenpoint.
That's in Greenpoint. Mm-hmm. So thank you both. We'll see you at Jubilee in a week
and
a half.
Yeah. We're excited for that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Nordstrom's Olivia Kim. Earlier this week, I sat down with Olivia, the Vice President of Creative Projects. That's a title that was especially created for her. She's the brainchild behind Nordstrom's monthly themed shop called Pop-In at Nordstrom. This month's Pop-In is called Eats, and it's all about food. We were psyched when Nordstrom asked us to participate, and we're also psyched to talk to Olivia, who I've known since her days at opening ceremony. So catch my interview after the break.
Do you love chocolate? Turn your passion into a profession with École Chocolat School of Chocolate Arts. This award-winning school offers many programs for chocolate making, so you can master techniques and gain the expertise and business knowledge you need to become a professional chocolate maker. You'll create mouth-watering chocolate recipes from professional instructors while interacting with your classmates and tutors all online. Become a chocolate expert with École Chocolat via your computer, phone, or tablet. Pursue your passion for chocolate. Visit écolechocolat.com today.
Hey, Olivia.
Hi, Claudia.
Thanks for being on Radio Cherry Bomb.
No, I'm super excited. I've never done anything like this before.
We were super excited that you guys approached us to be a part of your Eats Pop-In at Nordstrom.
Yeah, I mean, we were so excited that you guys said yes. And we've been such huge fans of the magazine and the radio and the podcast and everything that you do. And in my opinion, there's nothing better than girls and food. So when you put them together, I guess that's probably why you guys have this like super cultish following.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so sweet of you guys. So just a little bit. Tell us a little bit about this pop-in because it seems like so much work. It's monthly.
So every month, every 4 weeks, we curate a pop-in across 8 stores and online. And it really gives our customers an opportunity to experience something new and exciting every 4 weeks. And hopefully they get in a rhythm and a cadence of saying, oh, I wonder what's happening at Nordstrom this month. And, you know, we've done some really great partnerships with bigger brands like Nike or Topshop, but then we've also done some where we've introduced smaller brands in a different way where they can experience it, like Warby Parker. So they'd never really partnered with a retailer outside of their own stores. And then we do my favorite ones, which are the curated ones, where we pick a theme and then we go out and we try to find the newest, coolest stuff, whether it's food, apparel, technology, stickers, pencils, drones, you name it. Drones have been one of our most popular items. Drones and inflatable kayaks for two. Like, the weirder, the bigger things are, people like them. And we like to play with price point, too. So we like to always have, you know, fun erasers in the shape of funny, you know, animals for 99 cents to custom blacked out Rolexes for $30,000. Wow. I mean, that's always been that we love to play with that high-low and then the mix of all of the different types of things that can be found in a shop.
I know. I was looking at the Eats website last night and you had some great stuff in there. Like this, there's like an ice cube thing that you don't have to touch the ice. It's so genius.
Yeah. And then for foods, you know, I've always wanted to build my own grocery store. I've always been obsessed with the way that grocery stores look, how full they are, how packed and just like how well merchandised and organized. And so for somebody who builds shops and has been in retail their whole life, it's the ultimate challenge. But then I wanted to do it in a way that felt very so a little quirky, a little bit of the mix. And so finding things like polar bears that make ice cubes, it's one of those fun things.
You had some other great stuff in there, like this line called Dirty Girl Soap.
Oh, yeah.
Food shapes.
Oh, my God. I just bought those for some presents. But there's like a chicken leg.
Oh,
and there's
gosh.
Two scrambled eggs, or rather two fried eggs. And the soaps are all vegan. They're all made with like 100% all natural products. And they smell amazing. But it's like you're sniffing eating this chicken leg that literally like looks like a piece of fried chicken. It's very funny.
It's pretty amazing. How do you come up with the ideas for each theme?
Really and truly, you know, I sit with my team, which is really small. We're just about four people. And we kind of just say, what are we interested in right now? Because the reaction to them is so quick and because we're doing them on such a quick cadence. I mean, we're really building these shops only as far out as 8 weeks. So we're kind of we can kind of, you know, bring in whatever it is that we're super into. And a lot of them are last minute. So we're able to be nimble and flexible, which is really nice. And a lot of times they just happen to be seasonally based, you know. So if it's starting to get warm, we want to do something that's about summer and bathing suits and towels and like, amazing sunscreens and products like that. So it's really just kind of whatever's at the top of our brain.
Right. And how do you actually research these products? Do people come to you or do you like go and search on the internet or travel?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty organic. You know, we travel about half of the year.
Wow.
So whenever we're traveling, we always just make mental notes of stuff. We keep everything that we see. We keep every email. We file it away. And it's funny how the zeitgeist works, because once you start thinking about something like food, it's amazing how all of a sudden, I know this sounds really, really like ethereal and big, but all of a sudden, all these different food vendors just start coming your way and they start sending you samples, and all of a sudden you've got the makings of a shop. And I don't know why that happens, but it just does. And so when we started thinking about food, you know, we actually have been thinking about it for almost a year, and we were like, God, this sounds so overwhelming. It's like so much stuff, you know? And then once you start looking at one person who makes granola out of his backyard, then he's got a friend who makes honey, and then the honey maker's got a friend that makes chocolate, and then the chocolate maker's got a person who makes pot holders. And, you know, it's like everybody knows everybody who knows everybody, which we love, and then we can support a lot of local communities. So this one in particular really, really played into that vibe super well.
So you moved to Seattle from New York.
I did.
To work at Nordstrom.
I did.
About 3 years ago?
Exactly.
So that must have been a whole new kind of experience for you, because Seattle and New York, they're pretty different.
Pretty different. It was wild. I had lived in New York my entire life, born and raised here. I never thought I would leave. And I had never even thought about, I mean, the only time I ever thought about Seattle was really when I thought about Nirvana, when I thought about Kurt, when I thought about Courtney. And then, you know, I think I remember when I was in high school thinking like, oh, maybe I should apply to the University of Washington just because I could be near Nirvana, Kurt, Courtney. You know, like that's all you ever really think of, is it's the heart and soul of grunge. And moving to Seattle was the bravest and scariest thing I've ever done in my life. Like, leaving all my friends and family behind, I knew nobody there. And it was such an incredible and pleasant surprise to be there. It is probably one of the most beautiful places I could imagine living. It has this incredible uniqueness about mountains on one side and the ocean on the other side. It's surrounded by water. The air is incredibly crisp and clean. If you've ever spent any time there, it's unbelievable. And the food scene is really what makes it.
It's really, really good out there.
We have great food here in New York, but the food out there, there's just something about the quality of it, care.
The produce is amazing.
Right? Yeah. And I think it's because of all the, I mean, it sounds so dumb, but I think it's really because of the rain.
Oh, yeah.
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 I mean, it's like such an obvious thing, but it's pretty wild how amazing the food is out there. And the food scene, like, I've never seen so many foodies or self-proclaimed foodies as there are out there. And, you know, restaurateurs are celebrities there. It's pretty awesome. I love that.
Do you have any go-to places in Seattle that you love eating?
Yeah, well, I'm a diehard Asian food eater, so I pretty much only eat Asian food, so I seek it out everywhere I go. And there's, you know, in New York, like, Chinatown is such a huge thing. It's like Chinese food and Japanese food are really big here. But out there, it's really big Vietnamese, really big Thai. And so all of that is super good. And I love the way that they've kind of incorporated the mix of Thai and French, and it's become a little bit Americanized and cute, and it doesn't have to be, you know, these like grimy places where they surf, you know. It's like the way it is here in Chinatown. It's been really, really, quote unquote, gentrified in this way that has become extremely charming and delicious and healthy. And the best thing about eating in Seattle, I'm a super picky eater. So, and I cringe when I say that because I'm always so embarrassed by it.
It's okay. It's normal these days.
No, but I'm like, my husband, he's like, ugh. You know, like he shakes his head and he like has to prepare himself before I order. And they're like, no problem. We've got some fresh things out in the back. We'll just throw something together for you. And it's incredible.
So where do you like to eat?
I really like, there's this incredible hole in the wall in Queen Anne, which is the neighborhood that I live in, called Cafe Golden Black, and it's just, it's Korean food, but they make it so home style. I love this place called Revel, which is this Korean place also in a neighborhood called Fremont. I love, God, there's so many places. I love the Whale Winds, which,
ooh, yeah.
Have you been there?
Yeah.
It's so good. Oh, it's so good. I love, there's a place called Chaco Canyon, which is, have you been there?
I haven't been there, no.
It's like near the college campus, so it's near UW, and it's like organic and vegan, and they just serve these amazing bowls, and I love any place that has a community bowl where you pay what you can afford.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
They have that out there?
They have that there. So, and the only other place I've seen that is Portland.
Wow.
Yeah, and so you get a super healthy bowl that has, you know, a grain, a protein, a vegetable, and it's warm, and you pay whatever you can afford. The suggested price is $9, but, you know, if you don't have it, if you only have $2, you can pay $2. If you don't have anything, you can pay nothing and pay when you can.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, which I think is incredible. I love that they do that. I love Cafe Flora, which is in Madison Park, and it's a vegetarian.
I'm getting the sense that you're a vegetarian.
I was a vegan for 6 years.
You were?
Yeah, and then I'm trying to bring a little bit of dairy back into my life just for the protein and calcium, but that's getting personal.
Vegan's hard. I don't know how people do vegan. It's so tough.
Yeah, but in a place like Seattle, it's so easy.
Easy, yeah.
It's so, so easy. You know, everything has a vegan option to it. And, you know, there's no judgies. You know, there's nothing like that there.
No eye rolling.
No eye rolling. No, you know, everything has an alternative in Seattle, which is pretty nice. And I think that, you know, cities like New York have become much more accommodating for it. Like the West Coast is just so much better about that kind of thing. But New York has become so much better. And that's why if you go Asian, you can kind of never go wrong.
Yeah, exactly. They always have vegetarian options.
Yeah, totally.
So tell me about the difference in lifestyle out there, because I mean, I just came back from traveling in Asia, and I think coming back to New York was like a big shock this time.
Yeah. Do you ever find that when you come back from being in a place that is so culturally different that you want to live in that culture for a little while longer?
Yes.
But then slowly, like 2 weeks in, 3 weeks in, you're back to your same old routine of, you know, elbowing around and, you know, not being as zen as you'd like to have been from being on holiday.
Yeah, this was the first holiday where I did not want to come back, actually.
Yeah.
But the last place I went to was like an island in Thailand that was so peaceful and quiet. Okay. And it was just amazing. Amazing food, like probably the best food that I had on my journeys, which included, I went to Singapore for a magazine conference for Cherry Bomb, and then I went to Saigon, Bangkok, and then this island. But I often miss New York when I'm away from it.
Yeah.
This time I did not.
Yeah. I often feel that way about Seattle. It's a totally different lifestyle for me. I have this little tiny home that I bought a year ago.
A real house?
A real house. It's a 1916 Craftsman home.
Wow.
It's about the size of a mushroom. It's like a gnome home. It's like meant for only small people. Only a small number of people can fit in there. And when I'm in Seattle, I really just focus on work, and it's like relaxation for me. You know, I don't have that many friends in Seattle, so I go to work and then I enjoy my life. Like I wake up at 5, I go for, you know, a 4 to 6 mile run, I eat super healthy, I'm in bed by 9, and it's like the rinse and repeat.
Right.
But it's really such a nice recharge for me.
Yeah.
And then when I'm in New York, or when I'm traveling, or I'm anywhere else living out of a suitcase, it's okay, because then I can just kind of go back home, collapse, regroup, refresh, eat really healthy, re-nourish, and then get back on the road. It's a beautiful place to be. And then for the first year that I was there, every chance that I got, every weekend that I was there, I would just get in my car and I would just make a goal to myself, travel 2 hours in any direction, get in your car and go and get lost. And that's kind of how I discovered Washington, which was pretty incredible. And to be in a part of nature like that, whether you're lost in a forest or lost in, you know, they've got, Washington has, it's like one of the only places that has a subtemperate climate also. So they have actual rainforests there.
Wow.
Yeah. And so you can get into a rainforest within 2.5 hours.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And they have some of like the oldest moss.
Wow.
I know. It's crazy. I mean, when you think about just not to totally nerd out, but if you think about geography, like how a place like Seattle is even formed, it's all formed by glaciers. So that's why there's so many lakes, because as the glacier is moving, melted. It just leaves water and lakes everywhere. And so a lot of that stuff is really prehistoric. It's incredible.
Has it made you more of an outdoor person?
I've always been an outdoor person. But I think when you live in New York, it's hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, the idea of just getting out of the city. Yeah. And so then you think about the hour of traffic, either up the west side or the FDR. You're just like, forget it. I'll just stay here.
Yeah.
And in Seattle, it's just so much easier to get in. I have a car. You know, you have a car. You don't have to rent the car. You don't have to go to the car rental or deal with Zipcar, or if that even exists anymore. And you just go. But one of the things that is you have to get over is the rain. So you do have to say, no matter what, don't let the rain stop you. So if you're planning on going on a hike, you just have to bring your rain gear too.
I feel like in Seattle, though, it's more like misty.
It is.
It's not really like a hard rain.
It's not like the when it rains here.
Yeah.
You know, when it rains here, like everything is like running for cover. It's not like that. So you kind of just always get this mist on your face, which is why I feel that people in Seattle have such incredible skin.
Yes.
Their skin is amazing. And even, you know, like women who are old, they don't look older because they have no sun. There's no sun damage.
So you're moist and pale.
Just constantly, you're moist and pale. You have no wrinkles. You have no sunspots.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious.
Well, we have to talk a little bit about before you moved to Seattle, because you worked at Opening Ceremony for 10 years.
Yes.
And people love that store. Were you one of their first employees?
I was their employee number one.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was their first employee, and in the very beginning, and for quite some time, it was just Carol and Umberto, who founded Opening Ceremony, and me. And, you know, we did everything from taking out the garbage to going on these incredible buying trips, trying to find, you know, new fashion designers and new artists and new people who were doing these innovative things. And, you know, we would be in the back of the store. And I remember when you would come in, too, because we were part of this, like, small group of, like, young people that were trying to do these entrepreneurial things. And everybody wanted to support each other.
Yeah.
But we would be in the back. And, you know, we would play, like, paper, rock, scissor to see who had to go out if a customer came
in. Oh, my gosh.
Because we were so scared. You know, like, I'd be like, I don't know how to sell anything. I don't know what to do. But it was... it was such an incredible time, and I try, you know, one of the things that people ask me a lot is, do you think that you could start something like that now? And to tell you the truth, I don't know that you could, because the world has changed so much in 10, 12 years.
People are less innocent than they were.
And they know so much now.
Yeah, they know too much.
Yeah. Because everything is so available and accessible. You know, all the information is out there, and people's stories have been shared and told and shared and told again. You know, I think about all of us back then. You know, we were all trying something so new for the first time, and we didn't have a way of sharing it other than by word of mouth or physically being with each other.
Yeah.
You know, in the back of Opening Ceremony too, we had these extra desks that we were just renting out to friends. You know, one person was starting a magazine, one person was about to launch a PR company.
Yeah.
You know, and all of those people have gone on to do incredible things.
Yeah, really good things.
Yeah.
I think about it sometimes, and I'm just amazed at how people turned out, you know, because we were just like kids.
We were kids, but it really was so innocent, and it really was so genuine. You know, this idea that you want to support your friends, and everybody had these great ideas. And I don't know, look at where everybody is now. It's such a, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's like freaking awesome.
I know. I'm really happy for everyone.
Me too.
But you guys always did stuff around food. Were you just a foodie? Like, were you just a food lover growing up?
I think that part of being Asian also is there's such a huge respect for food, and food is your apology. You know, like if something goes wrong, your mom cuts up an apple. If you get into a fight with her, she cuts up an apple and serves it to you. Food is how you bond with your family. Food is at the center of everything in our lives. And I think that exists in every culture.
Yeah.
And, you know, Umberto and Carol have always had such a huge love for food. Also, Umberto's mom is an incredible cook. She had a catering company. She still does.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and she's an incredible cook. And Carol's an amazing cook. Actually, Umberto's a really great cook, too, and I'm a horrible cook.
You are?
Yeah, I just reap the rewards of all of that.
Just hang out around those people, and they'll give you food.
Exactly. And my mom is an amazing cook. And I guess I just, like, surround myself by people who are, you know, really good feeders. And you just... I think that, you know, there's always been that food element there because it's part of life. And opening ceremony was really all about true lifestyle. And I know that sounds so cheesy, but back then, you know, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, there weren't that many retailers or, you know, fashion brands or even quote-unquote lifestyle brands that were incorporating all the different elements that can be part of an experience. So we always had that. And, you know, every time we would go to different cities to explore them, we would always be looking at restaurants and food. It was at the pinnacle of what we did. Like, breakfast was important. Lunch was important. You can't skip a meal. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite town to eat in, city to eat in?
I love eating in Tokyo.
In Tokyo, yeah.
It's so fun.
I'm dying to go there.
It's so fun. I mean, from vending machines, you know, where you can order your ramen through a vending machine and it spits out a ticket and then you go inside, to just all of the little snacks and the packaging and all of that stuff, the rice crackers and how beautifully wrapped it is in, you know, gorgeous paper. Yeah,
presentation.
Ugh, it's unbelievable.
Speaking of Japan, I didn't go to Japan on this trip, but my friend turned me on to Tokyo Banana. Do you know this?
No. What
so,
is Tokyo
Banana? I have some of them. These are the wave. These are the, like the, they're like palmiers, but you can see they're like shaped like a little banana.
Oh my God. This is the cutest packaging I've ever seen. It has a bow tie perfectly placed at the top of the banana.
And what they're really famous for is not these, but these banana cream filled like cakes. And they have, like, the zebra one and the cheetah one and the hearts, the one with hearts on it. And it's so cute. And literally half our trip was finding out where we could get these. And they are pretty good, I have to say.
Did you find them?
We did. In this one place in Singapore. And I think I spent, like, hundreds of dollars.
I'm sure.
Because they also had these Kit Kats, like the regional Kit Kats.
Oh, right. And then they have seasonal ones, too, right? Because now it's Sakura cherry blossom season.
I got some Sakura Kit Kats. So later today, I'm going to go to the office and drop off some treats.
Amazing. Lucky them.
But yeah, if you're, you told me you were going to Tokyo.
Yes.
Next, so you'll have to like look out for them.
I'll look out for them. And the best place to buy, I love buying in Tokyo at the airport.
Yes,
they have the best. Airports are the
so
best.
Good.
They have all... I mean, you go into the department stores in Tokyo, and all of Asian department stores in the basement where they've got the
food
grocery,
court,
the
yes.
food court, and all the amazing snacks are there, but the airport has them all, too.
Oh, my God. That's a big secret. Just if you're going to Asia, transit, like fly into Narita.
Exactly.
And then fly out.
Exactly.
All right. So last but not least, speed round.
Speed round.
Okay. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
How do you take your coffee?
Half coffee, half soy milk.
What's your favorite kitchen tool? I know you don't cook, but do you have one?
I'm obsessed. Well, in the Poppin Eats right now, there is a mashed potato kit. So it comes with a brush, a peeler, and a masher. And it's the most adorable thing ever. And I'm obsessed with it because I love the idea that this entire kit comes in this box. And
just for mashed potatoes?
Just for mashed potatoes. It's one purpose, completely functional, and that's it.
What's in your refrigerator right now?
Nothing except for kimchi that my mom left there. She was just in Seattle.
Aww. Does your mom still live here?
Yeah, my mom lives here, but she comes out to Seattle all the time. So
amazing.
Yeah,
she brings you food.
She brings me food, and then she makes food, and she like stinks up my entire house and like leaves it sitting in the refrigerator.
Kimchi's stinky.
It's stinky,
really
and
stinky.
Like the stinkier it gets, the better. It's kind of like cheese.
Yeah.
Like the more fermented or moldy.
Well, you've already answered this, but favorite cuisine?
Korean, hands down.
What foods are you craving these days?
I've been eating a lot of orange-colored fruits lately. I don't know why, but I've been eating a ton of cantaloupe, a ton of mango, and a ton of like clementines and cuties and tangelos and all that stuff. It's odd. It's very, very odd.
All right,
I know.
Well, maybe you're lacking vitamin B or something.
Or C. Yeah.
I had loquats in Thailand, and they're so good.
Is that like a liger? Like a mix of a lion tiger? Is it like a lemon kumquat?
It's like this little... They look like mini mangoes.
Oh.
And they kind of taste like mini mangoes.
Were they good?
They're so cute. It's so good.
Is there a giant pit inside?
Yeah. Like a mango.
Yum.
Yeah.
I love mango.
Me too. I smuggled in a Thai mango.
Oh my God, you're going to get busted. Do you know, I tried to bring in an orange from London and I had to go through TSA.
Are you serious?
And then they flagged me for my next 5 trips.
Oh my God.
And they went through my suitcase and it was all because I smuggled in an orange.
From London? Doesn't even seem like that big an offense.
I know, yours is like an exotic mango from Thailand. Claudia, you're going to get busted.
All right, well maybe we'll edit out
we'll
this
edit piece. We'll edit
this out. Is there anything you absolutely won't eat?
I don't eat birds. Mm. I haven't eaten birds in a really long time. I'm completely grossed out by birds. Like their wings, the space in between their wings.
Is it because they're descended from dinosaurs?
I don't know. Maybe. And I love dinosaurs. But it's like not an emotional thing. It's literally a physical repulsion to birds.
What if it's like a fillet? Like you
No. I'll know. Oh, no.
All right. What's your dream pet project?
To open a hotel.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a big one.
I guess it's not a pet project, but it's my dream project. I love putting things together, and I love the experiences that people have and the different ways that people can experience the same thing. And in a hotel, there's so much that becomes personal, and there's so much that people can take emotionally. So everything from the gift shop to the restaurant to the room,
the bar
to the soap to the smell of it, to the magazines that you read in it while you're waiting, all of that, it just seems so entirely 500% experiential. And for retail nerd/lover like me, there's so much that you can buy and see and touch, it just seems so fun.
Wow, that's a big, big pet project.
I know.
Where do you want to travel to next?
Southeast Asia, like you were just saying. I'm dying to get to Thailand, Vietnam, Singapore, Laos, Indonesia.
Bali.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to Bali these days. I don't know.
How do they get? I just don't understand like how people have time to get there.
It's so far. I haven't been to Asia in a long time. And the plane ride, I was like, oh, this is why I don't come here that often.
I know. It's like, 12 and then you've got a layover and then it's another 6. And you just can't believe how far.
Asia is a big place. And I mean, Bali to Tokyo is probably like 10-12 hours.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. So every time I'm in Tokyo, I'm like, oh, I'll just hop, skip, and jump, and I'll get to, the Maldives or Bali or someplace down there. But it's another Tokyo. You know, it's like you're going to Tokyo twice, and then you got to get back.
Exactly. Not as easy as it seems.
No.
What's the best advice you could give to someone who wants to do what you do?
I don't know that I have a piece of advice. I think it's probably, and it sounds really trite perhaps, but it's really about you have to love it. You really have to love it. There has to be something about where you see yourself that makes you feel like warm and gushy inside and makes you excited about what you do. Like, I love my job. I love what I do. I love what I get to do every month. And I think the minute that I'm not excited about it is the moment where it will show. So you have to just really be in love with whatever it is that you want to do.
All right. Good advice. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I know. It's so exciting. I haven't seen you in a long time.
I know. It's nice to see you. And I like the fact that I get to see the inner workings of Roberta's before they're even opening. I've never seen it where you can actually see it.
Yeah. There's no one here, literally.
Yeah, exactly.
Safe travels
Thank
to
you.
Tokyo.
Thanks
have
for
fun.
Having me.
Yeah.
Nice to see you.
Oh, and Eats Pop-In at Nordstrom is from March 17th to April 18th.
And it's also available online if you're not in a city where there's a Nordstrom.
Yeah. Happy shopping.
Happy shopping.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Well, that's it for today's Radio Cherry Bomb. Thanks to Olivia Kim. If you aren't in the same city as a pop-in shop, you can still shop all the products online at Nordstrom.com. Eats runs through April 17th.
Make sure to check out our Instagram account. We're giving away a $100 gift certificate to Nordstrom and a signed copy of the Ovenly Cookbook to one lucky winner.
big chocolate kisses to our sponsor, Ecole Chocolat. Check out the different classes they offer at ecolechocolat.com. If chocolate is your passion, you just might want to make it your profession.
Thank you for listening.
You're the bomb.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Sophia Alvarez, and I'm a playwright who loves food. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Lonnie Holiday of Brutus Bake Shop, because the serpent cake she made for Caroline Polachek's wedding is the coolest and scariest wedding cake I've ever seen.